We're live. What's going on, everyone? This episode of the podcast, we're going to talk about weird health topics, things that aren't normally talked about or are somewhat controversial. I started this because I got a question about people who drink their own urine, right? So it's kind of like this new faction of people that are drinking their urine and giving anecdotes that, you know, it improved their skin, their hair, like the way they feel, depression, all sorts of crazy shit. So figured I could talk about them, and then maybe I have a list of different weird topics that I'm going to talk about a little bit here. But let's start with urine drinkers real quick. So I mean, you can look into it, but it was started by this, not started, but some weird, like, I don't even think he was a scientist, but some dude way back, you know, multiple decades ago started drinking his own urine, and he wrote like somewhat of a manifesto about it, and that's where these people are getting their motivation to do this from. You know, he talked about how you know, it can clear up skin, hair, get rid of dandruff, like cure depression, all sorts of stuff. So now there's like this this group of people that are super into it now, and it's there's literally no scientific evidence to back any of this up, right? It's all anecdotal, and some of these people are real proud. If you go on YouTube and type in chatting with a urine drinker or chatting with someone who drinks their own urine, there's a video that pops up that's pretty popular. It has a lot of views about this topic. And this guy he didn't hide his face or anything. He's like real proud to talk about how he drinks his own urine, and you know, he talks about all the benefits of it. But he said he drinks like some in the morning, some at night, all this stuff. You know, what would lead someone to start doing this? You know, why exactly would somebody start doing this? Not only start doing it in secret, but start being proud about, start telling other people that they're doing it. You know, whether or not it helped clear their skin or depression or something, you know, it's, the odds are it's some sort of a placebo, you know. There's actually multiple studies done about drinking and how harmful it is to your system. You know, you get, your body's pissing stuff out for a reason, right? It's waste products, it's excess stuff. Putting it back in, you know, common sense would tell you is not the best idea, but some people do it. You know, it's almost similar to like these carnivore people that are only eating meat. You know, they're super proud about it. They have to let other people know they're doing it. This one, the urine drinkers, I'm sure most people are pretty secretive about it. I don't think most people are walking around saying to complete strangers that they drink their own piss. But yeah, it's a weird time where all these really strange health factions are kind of, quote unquote, health factions are popping up. You know, people just really into some weird stuff. And I would definitely advise people, do not start drinking your own urine. Just don't do it. That's not a good idea. You know, I mean, you can look into it, look into these people that are doing it. I don't know of any like Facebook groups or anything that do that, but try, look around and see what you can find and see what they're all about. Super crazy. You got to definitely look up that video too. The guy in that video is like, he's super excited to tell people he drinks his own piss. So it leads me to believe that there's something else going on psychologically. You know, I'm not a doctor, but to be that open about drinking your own piss is concerning, to say the least. But definitely look into it. Look into what these people are talking about. It's pretty funny if you want a good laugh. Let's move on. Okay, so I didn't necessarily get a question about this, but someone had brought up the topic of like irritable bowel syndrome or like diarrhea, constant diarrhea. So, you know, if you're eating right now, I probably wouldn't listen to this, but yeah, so like our bodies are pretty good at telling us what's wrong or what they need. You know, if you have constant diarrhea or stomach pains or stuff, your body's telling you you're putting something in there that it doesn't want in there. That's not good for you, you know. And you could a lot of times it can come from people who eat relatively healthy. You know, some people eat really well and still have this issue. So, you know, definitely get it checked out. But I think I've talked about in the last podcast that doing like an elimination diet of sorts would definitely help you out, so you can kind of figure out what the problem is. Some people might be gluten, might be dairy. You know, you just got to figure it out for yourself. Some people react differently to different like vegetables too. If you eat too much starch or if you have too much fat in your diet, things can get weird. Too much fiber, all these things, like our digestive systems are somewhat delicate. You know, if you change things around and your body doesn't agree with it, it's going to let you know. While it's okay to, you know, kind of have that, yeah, I eat whatever I want in moderation attitude, I think that's the attitude most people should have. But if you're ignoring things like diarrhea and stomach pains and like acid reflux, if you're ignoring it, I don't know what to tell you. You know, you're gonna pay for it eventually, you know. So yeah, definitely. I mean, even if you just go to your regular doctor and ask them about it, you know, they might lead you to a specialist who can help you out. You know, I don't know too many people that have this problem, but people tend to kind of accept things as normal too. So if you've had like irritable bowel syndrome or constant diarrhea for a long time, people tend to just accept it as their reality and kind of ignore it and move on with their life when their body's literally like screaming for help, telling them they're doing something wrong. So just be mindful of those things. You know, your digestive system needs a break. It needs to be cared for just like any other part of your body. You know, that's why, you know, you don't have to fast, but I always recommend people at least try it, you know, 'cause most people that I recommend try it after they've given it a go. They come back to me and they say, you know, they thought they were going to be like really lethargic and tired, but they actually get like an energy boost from it. And that kind of just plays onto the fact that digesting food takes up a lot of your body's energy, like more so than working out does. It takes a lot for your gut to process food. So fasting in some sort of way is always a good idea. And then also, like experimenting with food, seeing what makes you feel good, what makes you feel shitty, you know. A lot of people don't even think about this stuff. They just kind of eat whatever, you know, they get acid reflux and diarrhea, they just ignore it, they just kind of keep going. But that's not something you want to do. You won't like try to study yourself a little bit, you know, see how your body reacts. You don't have to be super serious about it, but these things are important, you know, especially in long-term health. You don't want to be having diarrhea for 10 years in a row. Like, you know, take care of yourself physically, mentally, all that stuff. So I guess that covers that topic, diarrhea, vomiting, acid reflux. You know, just be mindful of stuff. Be aware of what's going on. Let's see here. Ooh, vaccinations. All right, this one's quick. Just get vaccinated. Jesus Christ. It's not that hard. Stop getting convinced by people who have nothing better to do on Facebook that it's going to give your kid autism or some shit like that. Don't worry about it. Yeah, get vaccinated. Or vaccinate your kids. You don't have to get the flu shot, I guess, but like I react pretty bad to most flu shots that I've gotten, like a lot of soreness, a lot of bruising around the area. But I think that's just a result of the needle. My body just doesn't react well to it, but I still get them sometimes. I think last year I didn't get it. And they're not 100% effective either. They're like, what, 30% effective or something like that? Because they have to take a guess as to what strain of the flu is going to be present, you know? So they wing it too. So it's not that serious. But as far as like the measles, the measles, mumps, and the MMR vaccine, like if you have kids, just get them vaccinated, please. There's kids dying from diseases that we thought were eradicated. Just don't be an idiot. I guess that covers that one. Let's see here. Measles, mumps, and rubella, that's what it's called. Antibiotics. Okay, so I guess while we're on the topic of medicine and stuff like that, long-term use of them, not a good idea, because they kill good bacteria too. That's all your gut is. Actually, you know what? This kind of leads back into the, you know, like diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, leaky gut, acid reflux. If you had a huge dose of antibiotics for something, whether you had like Lyme or something like that, it did a lot of damage to your insides that you probably don't realize or feel. But antibiotics don't just attack the bad bacteria in your gut. They attack everything that's bacteria, the good stuff, the stuff that digests your food, processes it. So being on them, you know, if you have to be on them, you have to be on them. I'm not saying don't get like an infection taken care of. But you know, some people are on them, I know, for like acne and stuff like that. Long-term use of them is not a good idea. You can probably, I don't have any data on me to back this up, but my guess is you could probably cause permanent damage to your gut and lead to, you know, permanent damage to your digestive system through long-term use of them. So, I mean, like I said, if you have to use them, you have to use them for whatever the situation is, but, try to get off of them as soon as you can. You know, talk with your doctor and figure that out. Let's see here. Ooh, caffeine. All right, so it's kind of funny the amount of people that'll be like, I don't do drugs, but they drink, they smoke, whether it's weed or cigarettes. And they drink coffee. Now that obviously it's the, you know, least dangerous of those on the list, but it's still a drug. Tylenol is a drug. Like people say, I don't do drugs. Everyone does some sort of drug, but caffeine in general, I don't know if you're asking about tolerance or just like when to use it, you know, but bottom line is you should be cycling off of it. You know, a lot of people will say that they're, it doesn't really affect them. They just like coffee for the coffee, yada, yada, yada. But a lot of times people who say it doesn't affect them, they've just built up an extreme tolerance to caffeine because they've been drinking coffee like once or twice a day for 5 years. So cycling off of it is a good idea. So like taking a week off and not doing it, not just coffee, the same goes for like pre-workouts and energy drinks, you know, being reliant on them is not a good idea. And you can really just like fry your adrenal gland. That's where a lot of burnout comes from. You know, people who are, you know, really, really reliant on it. It's like and they get crazy withdrawals. They can't go a day without it. That's not good. If you can't go a day without it in order to function properly, then you have a problem. And that's when you know you should try to wean yourself off of it or cycle off of it and then come back to it at a lower dose, right? But it's useful, you know, if it affects you like it affects me, it's very useful sometimes. But abusing it is not good for your body. I knew who was it? It was someone I used to work with. They would, before they work out, they would have a coffee, and then they would take two 100 milligram caffeine pills. And then this is like leading up to the workout. And then during like 10 minutes before the workout and during the workout, they would drink one of those Bang energy drinks that has like 300 milligrams of caffeine in it. So she probably totaled like, and she did this almost every day. If she was working out, she had the Bang. If she wasn't working out, she had caffeine pills and coffee. But on days like that, she would average like over 700 milligrams of caffeine in a day. Now, whether or not you have a good and this is a tiny, tiny person too. So this is just like bombarding her system. That's just not a good idea, you know? And she, you know, multiple times when she would forget to get coffee or she ran out of caffeine pills, she would literally be like a zombie. Like she didn't even want to talk to people. She was just useless. And that's when it becomes problematic, you know? That's when you have a drug problem, right? Caffeine. So just another thing to be mindful of. Like if you can't function without coffee, it's not a good thing. I mean, unless you plan on drinking coffee every single day for the rest of your life or something like that. I don't know. It's just, you know, you can use it every day if it helps you, but it is gonna do harm to your central nervous system and just fry the heck out of your adrenal gland. So not the best idea to abuse it, but yeah, hope that answers any questions you had about that. Let's see here. Okay, this is kind of this. All right, so this question was somewhat related to the antibiotics question because they are using it for acne. And it's mostly centered around the acne, not so much the antibiotics. So he said, any other tips about it? So I think everyone has maybe not struggled with acne, but everyone has had a zit or something in their lifetime. But one of the best things that I heard in relation to like bacterial infections or, you know, acne or even things like bad breath is the best solution to pollution is dilution. So it basically means you need to like clean your system out. You need to drink a lot more water. Most people with pretty bad acne, there's, you know, granted there might be other things going on, but you know, a lot of people, like myself, it's like mine comes out when it's, when I'm stressed. So it's very, stress related, but other people have hormonal imbalances. Their diet is terrible. So all these things play a role, but the big one is drinking water. If you can consistently get over a gallon a day, I promise your skin will clear up, very fast. Even if you're not struggling with acne, you'll just notice a difference in your skin. So yeah, I guess I hope that helps you. Remember, the best solution to pollution is dilution. Always stay hydrated. And that also relates to eating enough fiber, like cleaning out your intestines there. a lot of people, like I talked to this one lady at the gym one time was telling me about her son's irritable bowel syndrome for some reason. And she's like, oh, he's, you know, he's so bad every day. It's, you know, so terrible. He's inconsistent stuff. And then there's me and I haven't, she said, I haven't pooped in 4 days. So, so there's like kind of, one end of the spectrum to the other, but neither one is good, right? If you're having constant diarrhea, obviously not good, but some people who think they're healthy when they haven't pooped in almost a week, you know, she said over 4 days, that's arguably worse, you know, being constipated like that. That means your system is so backed up and so clogged, and that's what happens when it when it's clogged is it starts to almost seep out into other areas of your body. Your body has to get rid of the pollution in other ways, and your skin is a lot of times the quickest pathway for your body to detox, right? It'll just send things out through your skin. That's where a lot of like really cystic acne happens. Body's like desperately trying to clean itself out. So again, the digestive system is very, very delicate, and we tend to abuse the crap out of it. So if you haven't pooped in a while, you might want to look into taking some more fiber and drinking more water. The biggest cause of constipation is dehydration. A lot of people don't know that. They think they just don't eat enough fiber or whatever. But if you're not, you can eat all the fiber you want, but if you're really dehydrated, there's no water for that fiber to bind with in your gut. It's not going to do any good to eat the fiber. You need water with it too. So everybody on earth should aim to get over a gallon of water a day, 2 gallons ideally, but that's hard if you're not working out in that day. It's hard to get 2 gallons. You literally have to be drinking all the time, and it's just a pain in the ass. So, but definitely a gallon. Everybody should be aiming for over a gallon. Let's look at another question here. Let me scroll down. Ice bath versus heat or sauna. So there's a lot of research coming out about heat being better than ice for inflammation. The guy who invented the RICE acronym, so rest, ice, compression, elevation for injuries, he came out a while ago, and he was, you know, he said, based on the current research that I'm doing, I was completely wrong for inventing that acronym. So I guess the gist of it is that inflammation is your body's natural response to an injury, right? It kind of tells the rest of your body that this area needs fixing. So by icing, you stop the inflammation, but you also stop the signaling that area sends to the rest of the body saying that it needs to repair, right? So it might numb the pain and it might numb the inflammation, but what's actually happening is you're delaying the growth response or the repair response that your body naturally produces. So there's been a lot more research about using saunas, using hot tubs, and just heat in general for better recovery overall, whether or not you're injured, right? It could just be from working out, like soreness and stuff. The results have been saying multiple times that that heat is the big one now. And I've always kind of said that I never really used to ice my, you know, whether I was playing sports or like from working out, I never really used ice. I always liked to use heat. I always felt better. I always felt like it loosened muscles back up much better. So, you know, I think there's, there is one study in a few things that I read about doing both, right? So going from cold to hot to cold to hot. So you can give that a try, but I think the problem arises when people just do cold, you know, just to stop inflammation. They're actually unknowingly slowing down their body's natural repair process. So just something to think about. You know, not everyone has a hot tub or a sauna that they have quick access to, but most people have ice laying around. So you know, if ice helps you and you feel good using ice for injuries or recovery, then definitely do that. You know, no one's saying you have to use heat, but I'm just saying the science is saying otherwise now. So hope that helps you guys out. Let me try to find some other weird questions here. Stress management. I mean, if you're not doing everything correct, like people think they have really bad anxiety issues. Like, it's not good to self-diagnose, first of all. You should be, you know, maybe ask someone go see someone. But it's never really a good thing to pretend to play doctor really with yourself. If you're really, really stressed out about something, that's normal. You know, if it's a one-time thing where you're stressed about an event coming up or a situation or like a relationship or something like that, that's, you don't have an anxiety disorder because you're stressed about something that causes every other human being to be stressed too, right? So the problem also arises where people aren't taking care of themselves. If you're not eating right, you're not exercising, you can't definitively say you have some sort of disorder or something like that. If you're not doing good things for your body to counteract stress and anxiety and, you know, there are even things like meditation. If you're not doing those things, you can't say for sure that it's just your brain that's wrong, right? It's kind of stupid. So you need to exhaust all your other options before you self-diagnose or you exhaust all your options before you definitively say that you have something like that. And you should also get it diagnosed by someone who knows what they're actually doing, not you reading WebMD, because if you read WebMD, everybody thinks they have like cancer and like depression and anxiety and stuff like that. Everybody gets anxiety. That's part of life. You know, if you weren't anxious about stuff, then you're probably, I don't know, just an unmotivated zombie of sorts. So definitely, you know, you need to work out, you need to meditate, you need to eat right. There's a ton of research on how diet and the gut microbiome affects brain chemistry, right? So they're directly correlated, and it's a huge, huge connection between the two. So you need to figure out what it is that's actually causing you to feel certain ways, right? You know, that it's not good to think that you're broken when you're not doing healthy things. That's stupid. So, especially if you're not working out, right? People like who have insomnia, they can't sleep. If you haven't tried working out to help yourself sleep better, then I don't know what to tell you. Some people are kind of a lost cause too. They just are 100% convinced that they're broken, you know, that there's something definitely wrong with them. And they don't want to try anything. You bring up things like meditation and working out and fixing their diet, and they're like, no, 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 no. There's something definitely wrong with me, you know. But they say, oh, I have tried that, but they worked out once and they didn't like it. And then, you know, so I don't know. those are the worst types of people. You know, those types of people don't actually want to better themselves. They don't actually want to get better. They just, maybe they just like the attention they get by thinking there's something wrong with them, you know? Developing food allergies. Eat locally grown foods. Eat local honey if you can. I know that sounds weird, but yeah. Quick solution to that. A lot of older people tend to develop allergies that they didn't have before, like whether it's pollen or certain like flowers and plants that grow that they weren't allergic to as a kid and now they are. So the pollination kind of changes, but through the eating locally grown honey, you kind of get that pollination in your system before the real pollen kind of comes out. So that's a quick solution you can do. And just eat local foods too. That always helps. Let's see here. How long have we been going for? 30 minutes? All right. We'll go for a little bit longer. Bad breath. Same thing as before. Drink more water. Brush and floss, obviously, if you're not doing that. But also brush your tongue. A lot of people don't brush their tongue. It's important. It's where most of the bacteria is resting on the surface of your tongue. So take care of that. Also stop eating terrible foods all the time if you are. Let's see here. Cholesterol. Yeah, I mean, just get your blood work done. Well, so get your blood work done. But if they want to put you on like cholesterol medication, like what have you changed to lower your cholesterol before that? You know, that they're very quick to give out pills these days. So if your cholesterol is really high and they, you know, what does your diet look like? What does your lifestyle look like? If you're not eating right and exercising, your blood work's going to be shitty. That's just how it goes. You know, so like instead of eating less saturated fat, people just want to go on like Lipitor or something, you know. It's pretty funny, actually. You know, people will do, not that statins are like terrible for you, but you know, the things people will do before they resort to eating better and working out is very funny. Lower back pain, strengthen your glutes and your core. That's always, I had a SI joint injury a while back, and strengthening my glutes sounds weird, but saved it, fixed it completely. Most people's glutes don't fire the way they're supposed to, because everyone's sitting down all day and not really utilizing them like we should. But that they're connected to your pelvis, which holds your lower back in place, right? So that's what's doing all the stabilizing. If your core is weak and your glutes are weak, the only thing left to stabilize your lower back is your lower back. So makes sense why you would have pain if both of those are weak, you know? So do some hip thrusts and a lot of like core work. Do a few more questions here. Ebola. I don't know anything about Ebola. Weight reduction. Should I get the weight loss, like gastric bypass surgery? I mean, I guess talk to your doctor. I mean, surgery is always risky, you know? But if you're really that overweight, you know, can definitely be, I know a few people that have had it done, help them out a lot, you know. They just, if food is that much of a problem, if it's that much of a psychological problem where you need food as your anchor, you know, I guess it's a viable option, but you should obviously try to, you know, do things before that, right? Again, if you haven't tried to work out and lose weight through dieting, exercise, your first option shouldn't be weight loss surgery, you know? Because while the size of your stomach is going to shrink from the surgery, from the gastric bypass, your habits aren't going to be any different after the surgery, right? And eventually you'll just stretch your stomach back out. So what you really need to do is figure out how to get a behavior change out of yourself. That's the real issue. Everyone kind of wants the quick solution to it, but it's really a, it's a behavior issue. It's a psychological issue, and it's a very, it's probably the biggest overlooked aspect of weight loss and health in general. You know, this kind of instant gratification is not, it's not a good thing to expect, and it's going to set you up for failure, really. So, I mean, if you've talked with your doctor and you've tried many things and, you know, this might be an option for you, go for it. But if you can't change your behavior before you head into the surgery, right? So I would get the surgery if you've already been losing weight, right? If you, if you've had that behavior change for a consistent amount of time, then the weight loss surgery could be a big benefit to you, you know. That'll just be enough, you know, extra fuel to what you're doing. But if you haven't lost any weight by yourself, getting the surgery is, it might help you temporarily, but again, if food is still your anchor, if food is still what you resort to for good situations, bad situations, good emotions, bad emotions, you're really not going to change anything. You know, it might be harder to gain that weight back. But it'll happen. It happens all the time. It happens to most people that try to lose weight, up and down all the time. Constant struggle. For most people, it's like a lifelong thing. They just can't get over it. And if they do, it was because of their change in behavior, not because they got a surgery. Yeah. Let's see here. Losing weight and alcohol. This will be the last one, and then I'll end it. Alcohol, losing weight. I mean, it's empty calories, you know. It's not going to fill you up. So, not the best idea. I talked to this one guy in the gym probably 2 years ago. I had a meeting or an assessment with him, and and part of it was like, we have to ask them, you know, how much they drink or whatever. And he was like, oh, not that much. And I was like, okay, how much is it? And he said, just a 6-pack every night. I was like, that's not much to you? He's like, no, usually, you know, if I really want to drink, I'll do more. But, you know, I was like, some people, they have such a disconnect between what they're doing and what their problem is. You know, he thought drinking a 6-pack every single night, he thought that wasn't a problem. And he was trying to lose weight. I don't know how many calories are in a beer, but I know drinking 6 of them at night while you're trying to lose weight is not the best idea. So, I mean, just be mindful of it. Don't overdo it. Ideally, you wouldn't drink it at all if you're trying to lose weight, but, you know, you don't have to be super strict all the time. You should still be able to enjoy your life. So just don't drink a 6-pack every night and you'll be okay. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you all for listening. I want to give a shout out to our website partners, as usual, homefit101.com. If you're trying to lose weight, like we were just talking about, they do have a free guide for you that you can get emailed about fake healthy foods. If you go to homefit101.com/free guide. And also would like to shout out our other partner, passivepaychecks.today.com. If you're looking to develop avenues of passive income for yourself, they have a lot of free tools there. If you sign up for their email list, they give you access to business courses that you can buy, but they also have a ton of free stuff that you'll get through being on their email list. So, stuff like how to start a personal brand, how to build websites, stuff like that. So go to passivepaychecks.today.com. And yeah, thank you all for listening again. I'll see you on the next one. We'll be right back.